Welcome to Food and Loathing, coming to you from just outside of Backcountry, also known as fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. We're here, as always, to talk about food and beverage in this amazing culinary town. And by we, I mean myself, Al Mancini, a veteran Las Vegas food writer and creator of the Neon Feast Dining Guide, and my co-host, Samantha Gemini Stevens, the creator of the Wishbone and Vine Dining Blog and the editor-in-chief of the brand-new Las Vegas Dining News Blog, neonnews.vegas. Well, there's our credits. How are you doing today, Gemini?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Great, man. I tried to watch a little bit of the replay of that night's game, game two, man. I'm in a mood now.
Yeah, right?
I've got tickets for game six. I don't know if we're going to need a game six this round. So I guess I'm just
Not going to the next round if we keep this up. Yeah.
Great night. We have a great show for you this week. Gemini sat down with the new team at the Las Vegas Distillery for a couple of excellent interviews about what they're up to over in the Henderson Booze District. And she will tell you a bit about it and then share a nice long segment of her chat with Cody Fredrickson. So that's in the center of this week's show. Stick around for that. But look, you know how it rolls here. As two people who spend a lot of time dining in restaurants, we like to give you a glimpse into where we've been eating. And the hope is it'll inspire you to try one or two or three of these joints. And so to begin our rundown of this week's culinary highlights of Alan Gemini, I'm going to turn to Gemini.
I like
Gemini,
that.
Where you been eating?
Oh, my goodness. So I did a lot of sports stuff this week, of course, because of the VGK games, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But I started out, I wanted to try something new. There's a place around town called Sunny Side Up. There's a few locations.
Yeah.
One over in Boca Park near where we live. La Madre Canyon Grill came up, which used to be called Sunnyside, but somebody told me it was the same people. And they're just trying a sort of newer, more upscale concept.
Okay.
So I thought, okay.
I'm just going to go here. I'm going to flash back to Sesame Street, 1970-something. La Madre Canyon Grill. Your mother's canyon?
I guess so.
Is that what it means? Your mother's canyon?
The mother, yeah.
The mother's canyon. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little.
Just don't be talking about my mom's canyon. That's all I'm saying. But okay, maybe I'm misunderstanding. I did not take Spanish in high school. So, okay.
Yeah, so this location's on Grand Canyon and Flamingo. And here's the thing. The reason I chose them this week is because you had been talking about birria so much.
Ah.
And I was craving it so badly. They had a birria Benedict on the menu. Mm. And I'm such a breakfast fan. I thought, okay, two birds, one stone. Let's go check this out. I had really high hopes.
High hopes, really. I mean, it's kind of weird. I'm going to a new breakfast spot that's not known for Mexican food.
Well,
birria
they actually,
is the most
my
bastardized
is,
dish out
I know.
There right now.
But
let's see how they do it. Hopefully it was good, man. That's
right. You get me on this
chance.
So often.
Give
you're like,
chance.
You went to a lunch place that you only does this and only, and you've never heard of it before. That's what I do.
I respect that, man. Look, I'm always the guy that orders the one dish on a menu.
Right.
That I say, oh, there's no way that sounds like a good combination. Let's see if the chef can prove me wrong, right? And, I'd say 4 out of 5 times I am not proven wrong and I have a bad meal and I can't really bitch because I should have known that
Fair enough.
Didn't sound like
right.
a good combination to me to begin with. I'm not claiming that's what happened to you
no,
here.
No, no.
You know,
it's a mixed bag, to be fair.
But no, you got to be curious. I appreciate
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, but it ended up being a mixed bag. It just wasn't what I was expecting. If you say birria anywhere else, even if it is a bastardized dish all over the place, it should still be this really tender, not soft, mushy, mm-hmm. Braised beef or goat, preferably.
Preferably goat.
And a really fantastic.
Had it with lamb.
Yeah. That would be interesting. The game on that would be fun. The issue I had is that the beef was simultaneously dry and mushy.
Oh, God. This is like sand.
Yeah. So the spices on it were really good, but I wanted some of that like consomme stuff that everything is supposed to get braised in,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't any of that. And then the hollandaise was super anemic. So the crunch on the freaking English muffin was great, which it should be. Like that's an expectation. I know some people do it super soft. I like that little crisp at the bottom, especially for a dish like this that is kind of soft on soft on soft with mm-hmm. the egg and, and the braised beef. But so I really enjoyed the spices. I knew where they were going, and that part I really got. But the execution on the beef and the hollandaise were just not good enough. And it just, it kind of really dashed everything for me.
How much do you know about this place? I mean, like, is it a joint? I don't want to guess that things we don't know,
sure.
But your vibe would be, you know, is this a joint that just calls up Cisco or US Foods and says, like, bring us your birria and opens the bag? Or do you think it's a scratch kitchen?
No, I think they're a scratch kitchen, yeah, from what I can tell. Yeah. And so I've enjoyed breakfast at the Sunnyside Up over in Boca. I don't know if all locations are switching over. My understanding, like I said, is it's the same owners. When we went into Sunnyside a couple of years ago, if it's even been that long, my understanding were the owners were from Mexico, so I was kind of excited about this.
I'm having some memories about dealing with the owners of Sunnyside Up, and I'm very different, so maybe I'm just thinking of the wrong joint, to be honest.
Or my info's wrong.
Sunnyside Up,
fair.
I always did. It was always a good restaurant, so I've got no problems with those guys.
Yeah.
Maybe I wouldn't get them. They're birria.
Yeah, but, maybe it's just not the birria.
Right.
So we also tried the crab eggs Benedict. It's lump crab.
Yes, exactly.
So super tender.
Fantastic. One of those at Ocean Prime on the brunch menu, by the way. Just keep that in mind.
And again, muffins were perfect. There was beautifully sauteed spinach on there. The crab did have a taste like maybe somebody called Cisco, but it wasn't horrible. It wasn't inedible.
Right.
By
the way, yeah, no disrespect to Cisco or US Foods.
No.
By the way, they make tremendous products,
yeah,
and not every kitchen in the world makes every ingredient
right
from scratch. And a lot of you would be surprised how many
yes,
ingredients from scratch. So I am not blowing that out.
No.
Like that's an indictment of somebody.
These are huge food distributors that have been in this business for a long time.
They do things
on
multiple levels, super high
level,
down to the least expensive. And, you know, that's the deal. Somebody's making chicken wings, they call their supplier, and there are like 25 different grades they could order
correct
from that supplier.
Absolutely,
you know, so
correct.
You don't necessarily have to be killing your own chicken or
yeah
even, you know,
no,
lollipopping
the like
own
that
wings. You could buy that from people. So
yeah,
that's all we're saying.
Yeah. So also, though, some really good news. If you're a breakfast, like, potato fan, and I'm usually not because I find that those usually don't come out as crispy as I like, these were super crispy, roasted, smashed potatoes, seasoned well. I really, you know, John ate most of them, but really enjoyed the taste that I had. I wanted that skin on the outside. If you're going to tell me it's a smashed potato, I want the whole thing. Really, really great. Temperature on everything was great. Service was fantastic. So definitely give them a try, but I just have to figure out where that little disconnect was on the birria.
Yeah.
Really fun. The other thing I got there was this, because I'm a sucker for an onion soup of any kind, they had an onion velouté on the menu, and it was delicious. It was super smooth. It was creamy. It came with this like black garlic oil drizzled on top that
so
you would just mix in.
So for those who may not know what a velouté is, they've only had French onion soup, that kind of, right?
Sure.
So talk a bit about that.
The easiest way I can describe it is it's basically a blended soup. It gets a lot of creaminess. You can add thickeners and cream and things like that. I tend not to, or not too many on mine, but that's just because I don't like a lot of cream and stuff like that in my stuff. It's a super velvety, creamy looking soup. There's no chunks in it at all. It's super smooth, not grainy at all. Like, however they did this, it was amazing. So that alone I would go back for.
Cool.
Just to sit there and have that for lunch, because absolutely perfect execution. So I am not mad.
One great dish is a great meal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe if I'm paying ridiculous money, I want every dish to be great. But
yes,
generally speaking, you give me one great dish
yeah
that I can go home and talk about, I'm happy.
This wasn't that bad. I mean, you know, for two Benedicts, for, you know, the soup, and then, you know, you get beverages and things like that. I think it was like $60 to $70,
okay,
like not bad at all, because the portions also, by the way, are massive.
Cool.
So you are getting a lot of food for your money. Okay.
So
absolutely.
Remind people one more time, name and where it's at, that your mother's cat,
yeah,
the Mother Canyon, La Madre Canyon.
Yeah. La Madre Canyon Grill. Again, used to be Sunnyside Up. If you know that area, it's over on Grand Canyon and Flamingo by the 215.
Cool.
Let's see. So Monday I went over to the George. My sister's in town for some work. So we're both huge VGK fans, and I just love this space. And I wanted to show it off to her because she wanted to sit somewhere sort of sports bar. But I also wanted, like, you know, I don't always want just pub food when I go to stuff like that. I didn't want to be in a smoky environment. So we took her over there.
The
we
George,
reserved a table
the
at the Durango.
Is at Durango,
yep,
Resort. And it is really the next phase of evolution of this idea of combining sports books and good bars and restaurants, you know?
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's Las Vegas has evolved so much along those lines. And I really think it's all because we can now gamble from our phones. So that way they want you sitting in one comfortable fucking place for a long time.
Yeah.
In the old days, they didn't, man.
Yeah.
It was like anything near a sports book. It was like a fucking hot dog stand and you had to get back so you could bet. They did not want you to settle in for a long meal.
That's why a lot of them have that stadium seating with the little TVs.
Yeah,
and,
from the old days.
They want to keep you there.
In the olden days, people, you don't remember. There's a time you couldn't even bring your cell phone into a sports
book. That's right.
I mean, it was fucking weird. I'm serious. You young people, I don't know any young people listen to me, but fucking weird. So, but this is, you know, now we love it. We love getting people in there. We love putting all the games up for them because we know they're going to be gambling away on their phone. And they're close enough they go feed more money at the cage if they have to.
Yep.
So,
oh, there's an ATM right there between the indoor-outdoor space right there at the Durango area.
Yeah, so the George is really one of the best new evolutions of this comfy, wonderful sports watching dining experience. It's indoor, outdoor, screens everywhere.
And I love this sort of stadium seating because there's seating for everybody. Like there was three of us, so we got a table. We didn't want to sit at the bar and have to, you know, turn our backs because we wanted to watch the big screens as well. So we had perfect seat right in front of some big screens. But it has this elevated sort of stadium seating as you go back towards the bar a little bit. And it has like those Adirondack chairs if you just want to chill by yourself and drink a beer while you watch the game. It has tables for more than, you know, four or five or six people. They have the bar. There's screens everywhere, no matter where you're facing. There's more family side tables on the other side of the bar. Like there's a little bit of something for everybody, and you can't miss a screen to save your life if you tried. So really fantastic.
She
called it the bougie, what did she call it? The most bougie sports bar ever.
Yeah. Well, it could definitely qualify as that. And that's some, isn't that Corner Bar Management?
I don't remember.
I think it may be. So it's a good team in there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So we got a bottle of champagne. You know, they have really decent prices for stuff like that. So she and I shared that. But for food, oh my gosh, we tried the short rib sliders with spicy onion straw crisps. Those spicy onions were so good. I damn near just didn't really care about the slider. And it was so good. The short rib is amazing. But the crisp and the spice on those onions, I just went, oh, I'm just going to keep stealing these off the plate.
Nice.
We also had the baked goat cheese with herbs. And I love how when it comes out, it's just a little ooey gooey, but it still has a little bit of that graininess of good goat cheese. Mm-hmm. And it's got the gaminess and it's got all kinds of herbs and maybe a little chopped tomato in there. And it comes with really crispy bits of bread if that's your thing. Like I just kept putting stuff,
everything on your plate. Hell yeah.
And then we got the buffalo wings. You have options of sauces. We just went straight, you know, buffalo for the hot wings and really good. The only thing I found weird is their blue cheese tasted really like mayonnaise-y. And I like mayonnaise on a sandwich. I'm fine with that. But in my blue cheese.
So it's like a blue cheese dip.
It still was more mayonnaise on my tongue than blue cheese. So that would be the only thing for me. And then I don't usually do desserts, but this one was so good. Nikki and I got a peach cobbler. And it had huge pieces of really nice roasted peaches. It had beautiful like cinnamon flavors. It wasn't too sweet. It had a really nice like pastry crust on it that was crispy in some parts and soft in others, as if you were digging into a pie. Really phenomenal. And then this beautiful, I forgot the flavor. It was like a toasted vanilla, almost a marshmallowy kind of bourbon caramel ice cream thing. So good.
Just said like every delicious word all in one fucking sentence.
Right?
I don't know what they called it,
but those were all the flavors and it was amazing.
Damn.
So that alone was worth it. Had a fantastic time. So thank you to everybody over there. And then last night I went over to Half Bird in Henderson.
Half Bird.
I do. And I hadn't been to the Henderson location yet this whole time.
So it's such a better fit. And I love, and by the way, I'm going to tell you a bit about what's happening to their old space later in the show.
Okay.
And Spring Mountain Road. But as much as I loved them on Spring Mountain Road, and they were closer to me on Spring Mountain Road, I think the Henderson is such a much better fit for everything that's amazing
about
Half Bird.
So,
it's a neighborhood place.
Yeah.
You know?
And so I was talking to Nikki again about it last night. And I said, I really loved the OG on Spring Mountain because proximity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the food is fantastic, but it was so much closer that I don't know about other people, but I went all the time at least. And I love all the offerings. But this new space, it's a much bigger profile inside. They've got this wall of beer where you can get a card that, you know, when you give your credit card for your order.
Yeah, the self-serve beer wall.
You get an authorized card to go and self-serve your beer, you know, for the evening. They have happy hour all night on game nights. Mm-hmm. So that, at least VGK specifically, that's what they told me last night. So I don't want to.
There's always a game somewhere.
Yeah, but I don't want to say every game, every night.
Not every game.
That's not fair.
Played. You can't pull out your checkers set and get fucking half price. Don't try.
But that outside patio, as much as I loved the other one for its own vibe, it was super clean. It was super angular. Everything was nice and open. This one is nice and open too, but it has more of that backyard vibe. Mm-hmm. So we sat at this bright red picnic table. We had TVs on either side of us. But let me talk about the food. So nothing we haven't talked about before, except for a couple little spoilers in here. Of course, we got the half bird. That's the original rotisserie chicken straight out of the oven. We got some sauces. My favorite are the scallion ginger and the garlic chili crunch.
The garlic chili crunch is really good.
It's so good. But we also got the green curry ranch. We got the yuzu hot honey. We got a little extra gravy for the potatoes because that gravy is the schmaltz gravy they make with the stuff that drips off the chickens in the oven. Like, you can't not eat that. So we also got Brix's mac and cheese, which is of course made with Spam and furikake.
Yeah.
Super tasty. Their cheese sauce is lovely.
Designed by the chef's son.
That's right. That's right. The ramen, I hadn't had it because at the OG, it used to be a late night weekend only thing.
Yeah, no, they do a good ramen.
So I ordered the ramen and they offered me, you know, spicy chili or butter chicken. And I said, well, we'll just go with the butter chicken because we can always add chili sauce to it. Right. Oh my God. That broth. It was savory. It was rich. It was stick to your ribs. It was everything you wanted to be. There was such depth of flavor that I can't even get over it. It was fantastic. The I wouldn't even call it a ramen egg inside. It was more like a gooey egg, which I like a soft boiled egg. It was so good. The middle was perfectly custardy, not dry at all. The pickled mushrooms in this thing were gorgeous. Really good foil to all the richness because you needed that acidity. Mm-hmm. So both hands up to the ramen.
Woohoo!
Really, really loved it. We got the chicken salad, which is not the same as the old one. The old one used to be more of like a pre-mixed, like almost like a chicken salad sandwich kind of stuff. Right. This one is a big salad base, cucumbers, romaine, green onions, you know, a few other things like that. And then they just top it with the chicken. And then you have your choice of the sauces. My only thing there is put it in a bigger dish because I even got a small one and it was like overflowing the bowl and it was kind of hard to eat. So we just dumped it on one of those paper tray things that they bring us, you know, and then mixed it up that way. So it was really good. And then we ordered the regular gravy potatoes, which were already really good. Fried potatoes, that gravy schmaltz, all the stuff like green onions and all the toppings that they have. But then they brought us some samples of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they brought out something on the menu that we didn't order, which was the cheesy potatoes with chili garlic crunch. And that's the same potato, a slightly different potato. It's like a dipper instead of like just pieces of potatoes or chopped or mashed or something, smashed or something like that. But it has the sauce from the Brix's mac and cheese, and then it has the chili crunch and all the green toppings and stuff. Mm. So good.
That was good.
Yeah. And then they brought us a sandwich, which it's based on a sandwich from a Reading, PA, Pennsylvania market. Mm-hmm. And I forget what he called it.
Reading Terminal Market?
That might be it.
It's in Philly, though, isn't it? I don't know. I'm not
maybe,
sure.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's in Philly. Okay. But I know there's a Reading, Pennsylvania, so my brain
I'm a little confused, too.
But it's a semolina bread with sesame that they get from Esther's. Mm-hmm. So local helping local. I love that. Instead of broccoli rabe that they use on the East Coast, they were using broccolini here at Half Bird, some pulled chicken, some chili garlic crunch, and it was the broccolini and the garlic crunch were mixed in with a couple of other like greens and things like that, and some provolone. And I guess in Pennsylvania, they use like a really thin sliced pork. And so here, of course, because they're a chicken joint, they're using the chicken.
Okay, it sounds basically like, yeah, you're talking about a Philadelphia roast pork kind of sandwich.
Okay.
Okay? So you want that from John's Roast Pork if you're ever in Philly.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure Reading Terminal Market, they probably make one there as well.
All of this sounds right. I knew you would know if I described it well.
The roast pork is like, fuck the cheesesteak. The roast pork is the real Philly sandwich. And that makes sense because the only people who used to make that here for the longest time was a place called Grindr.
Okay.
Which was John Anthony's restaurant. And John Anthony is a partner in
Half Bird.
So let's connect all the dots.
See, and I knew you were the guy to describe it to.
Oh my God, my useless. I am fucking AI. I'm AI with bad language.
Yeah, it's not Al, people. It's AI.
AI Mancini.
And then the other thing they brought us to try was a massive chicken parmesan with a huge fried chicken cutlet, I think, you know, again with provolone. I was told it was carbone sauce, lots of herbs. Fan fucking tastic. Really no other way to describe it. Super, you know, seasoned well, super crispy. The cheese was melty in all the right places. Mm-hmm. The sauce was really bright and wonderful. So yeah, that was
rock on Half Bird.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I've already mentioned the beer wall and, you know, the happy hour during
at least, right?
Yeah, so the beer wall itself is strictly local beers,
right?
And that's the self-serve draft bar. Mm-hmm. But they also have cans and other things from other places if you're interested. So but definitely you go check that out. Get your little card and yeah, take
good
care
tell
of your beer whenever you need a refill.
Yeah, okay, man, sounds like you've been dying out a lot. So have I. So I'll try to get through this without taking people's entire day. So where have I been dining? Let's see. Shortly after we wrapped last week's episode, I headed over to Fine Company for a little party to celebrate the launch of patio season.
Patios!
Roy Alomar and his team, they have a great outdoor space over there. And about a month ago, they launched their Fine Time menu, which is a happy hour menu, meant to be enjoyed on that patio, although it's not exclusive to that mm-hmm. patio. It's offered daily from 2 to 5. There's a menu of $9 bites and sips, including a smash burger. There's salmon tartare. There's pastrami melt egg rolls, truffle garlic fries. You get the idea. You know what a happy hour is. Look, I love the restaurant. It's on Neon Feast list of best comfort food spots. The patio is fantastic. Check it out. But I had to leave that party a little early and go over to hear Kim Foster speak.
Oh, yeah.
He's speaking about hunger in our valley over at UNLV. I'm such a fan of Kim, man. I'm really just beginning to dive into her new book, The Meth Lunches. I love her because she has a way of making us look at the uncomfortable truths about food and hunger in this
yep.
country. She does not shy away from the dark sides, even the dark sides of many so-called solutions
yep.
or the theoretical dark side of charity itself. I mean, she goes fucking deep and she does it in a way that provokes. She's always willing to accept her own share of the blame, which makes the difficult medicine that she's delivering like a little easier to swallow,
yeah.
I would say. And she does it with an underlying positivity and love of the human spirit that makes you want to be on her side, even when you hate what she's saying. So thank you, Kim, for being part of this community. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah,
that was
amazing.
Thursday. Then Friday was a really busy day for me. I started off at the grand opening of the drive-thru at Barbecue Mexican.
Yeah.
West Sunset Road. We've talked a lot about this, but man, the drive-thru finally opened for business. Chef Susan Feniger and Chef Mary Sue Milliken were both there. I spoke to both of them very, very briefly. We've already had longer conversations
yep.
with them about this project on this show.
They're up on neonnews.vegas.
There you go. Go check that out. But here's Chef Susan at the grand opening.
Very exciting. Yeah.
Well,
it's amazing to do our first one,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's different than the casino, different than the stadiums, but to be here, very excited about it.
And here's Chef Mary Sue.
I'm excited. I'm really nervous. I want it to be really successful, but I also, we've only been open 3 or 4 weeks, and every weekend, every day, it gets a little bit busier. We have a fabulous team here. I'm excited. The food is so yummy, and the drive-thru just got ready to be used about, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago. So, yeah, every day we add a little more fun to it.
I left their event and I headed over to Sake Fever at the Resorts World Pool. What a fantastic event, man. Big congratulations to UNLVino, all the UNLVino students, Chef Mark Sandoval of UNLV. Just a fantastic event, really well run. You know, very, very cool to see all those students getting out there. Had a really interesting conversation. I bumped into Luis DeSantos, and he was with the team from both Gyu Plus and Suzuya Pastry.
Ooh.
So now I'm going to have some news in news about in our news section later
yeah.
about both of those projects and what they're doing. But what I will tell you now is that Suzuya's got a new item that they rolled out.
Okay.
And it is basically called a monier.
Okay.
Not like named after the artist, but actually it's a it's a mochi beignet.
Oh, hell yes.
Right? So this is like their new signature
item,
my
God.
I think. And I think people, yeah, move over fucking Cronut. The Monier is on its way. And yeah, actually, I'm not going to dig too deep into that right now. But let me have Louis talk to you about the Monier.
We love beignet. Who doesn't like the classic beignet, right? Café du Monde. We enjoyed that. But to me, it's like, we're not trying to be that. But mochi is such a staple when it comes to Japanese pastry. And so we created this monier, a classic mochi beignet. It's the first. It's the original coming out of the Chinatown location, which is the Susuya Cafe. And so when we're open, we will be offering that in half a dozen, two dozen, three dozen, however you want. That is actually going to be. So it's a green tea monier, but it's also with the powdered matcha that we put in there, so to give it. And I think it's great with coffee. And to me, it's like something that you can just, hey, I'm in a rush, get that thing in here, enjoy it on the way to work or after work.
Okay, so more later in the show on news on both Suzuya and U Plus. But let's keep back to what I was doing all week. I had to leave Sake Fever. I went over early to check out the Nth Whiskey Experience's Grand Tasting.
Oh.
And man, if you like to drink good whiskey, that was definitely the place to be.
I had FOMO so bad that night.
I mean, yeah, I wished I still had a working liver and I could have really dug in and enjoyed, but I was not able to. But man, a lot of things to see and sniff and maybe take tiny little sips off of for me. But I also want to compliment the Wynn Las Vegas catering team or whoever the hell did the catering. It was excellent. Lots of kebabs, man. Lamb, beef, chicken, rice, a couple pastas. Good stuff. So I think the tickets for this event were about $600 bucks. And I have to say that if I were drinking for value, there was plenty of value to be had at this.
Amazing.
Lots of bottles that would probably be priced, I don't know, I'd say a couple hundred bucks a pop at retail. You know,
probably.
So we're not looking at $800 bottles necessarily, but you know, more than the average person stocks their shelf with, and unlimited pours of these babies. Mostly Scotch and Irish whiskeys, six or seven expressions of the Dalmore, for example, but also some cognac. The Hardy clan was there. The Grand Dame, I forget her name, but she was there pouring various ages of Hardy cognac up to 100 years. Some American single malts being poured, some Indian whiskey. Hell, I even saw some tequila. So something for everyone. It was a cool event.
That's
so
amazing.
I would actually recommend it if you're a whiskey person to get it on your radar for next year. I actually worked from home the rest of the weekend because I was just so behind on some things. So no restaurants to report Saturday or Sunday. But Motorhead and Ronnie James Dio got Shrunken Heads at the Golden Tiki a couple days ago. Dio's widow, and man, you know me, I'm a metal boy. So this was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Dio's widow, Wendy, was there and I spoke to her and asked her what she thought Ronnie would think about it.
He think it was hysterical. He would love it.
Oh, what else? I had a lunch at 1228 Main, some new pastries on the menu that I enjoyed, but honestly, I stuck to my old favorite, that I'd say Rubenesque pastrami and melty Gruyere, which is a really great sandwich. As good as ever. Try it. Trust me. You'll thank me. And then that same day, we celebrated a friend's cancer-free diagnosis.
Yeah.
Just last night. Went to a bash for about 25 or so people at La Strega. We were not there for the food, so I didn't take a lot of close notes on what I had. And you know that, and I posted some pictures, but I was not there about taking pictures. It was an amazing evening. And here's the thing that, you know, I just want to bring it up because I always say that the magic of food and of music, which are the two things I've dedicated my entire life to reporting on, their magic is that they are the backdrops against which the most important stories of our lives unfold. And as a result, they are imprinted on our most important memories.
Absolutely.
They get intertwined with all the first dates, the celebrations, the mourning, the comfort. They're part of it,
yes.
Right? And so every night, honestly, in restaurants around the globe, people are making memories that are going to stay with them until the day they die. Those of you who work in those restaurants, you're not always going to be part of that. You will always be part of those moments. Mm-hmm. You're not always going to be aware of those moments.
Yeah.
You may not always know what they're experiencing, what your customers are going through. But I swear at every restaurant on any given night, I'm sure somebody is doing something that's very, very special to them. And it is going to stick with them for a long time.
And make me cry.
All of you in the hospitality industry, you are a part of that. You've been part of something that's now engraved on people's souls. I don't want to be overdrawn. dramatic about it, but it's so perfect. Fucking true. And because this is something I believe really, really deeply, I want to say to the team at La Strega, thank you for a wonderful night. I want you to know that the taste of your grilled artichoke with leek and black truffle butter will always, from this point forward, remind me of what it's like to be among friends, celebrating the resiliency of life and how precious it is by telling some very inappropriate jokes. And that was my experience. You are all such a huge part of it. I want to thank you for that.
That was beautiful. Oh my God, you're going to make me cry. Hey, coming up in the news, a wine dinner at Chinglish and what's going into the old Halfbird's base. Funny, we were just talking about that on Spring Mountain Road. But first, I sat down with Cody Fredrickson to discuss what's going on at the newly reopening soon Las Vegas Distillery. This is Food and Loathing.
Would you like a free dinner for two at Joël Robuchon, the only Las Vegas restaurant ever awarded three Michelin stars? That's the grand prize in Neon Feast's photo upload sweepstakes. To enter, just go to the Neon Feast app or website and find the link to the photo upload sweepstakes page right up at the top with that picture of the Robuchon dining room. Check out the approximately 90 restaurants and bars that are listed on that page. These are the only restaurants and bars participating in the contest because they're the only ones that have activated the photo galleries on their Neon Feast listings. So find one you like, pay them a visit, snap a photo of some food, a beverage, or just you standing outside in front of their sign, and use the app or website to upload it to their gallery. Limit one entry per email address per day, one for a particular restaurant or bar per month. Find complete rules and details on no purchase mail-in entries at neonfeast.com/contest.
So this week I sat down with Cody Fredrickson of Las Vegas Distillery. It was bought in 2022 and they immediately closed it for renovations and starting their own spirits and things like that. But for those who don't know about the Las Vegas Distillery, it was founded in 2009 by George Rosch, a Hungarian-Romanian guy, came over to the U.S. With his wife on a student visa, had no real distilling background other than all the men in his family seemed to have pot stills to make brandies, which is the thing. He had to work with legislature here in Nevada to even be able to open it. They didn't really have the regulations to do it. So he worked with them. That's why it took a few years. He basically founded the Henderson Booze District with Las Vegas Distillery. And that's where Bad Beat is. Now it's, I think, owned by Neon Brew. I could be getting that wrong. But Craft House is there, things like that. So moving forward, he was doing things like rum and whiskey. And he would use like ancient grains and cool woods and things like that. Sadly, in 2018, George died of a sudden stroke. No, he wasn't sick. It just happened. So his wife, Kata, was kind of keeping it open for a while. She eventually sold it to these new owners. I don't have the new owners' names. Everything just says they're privately owned. Even the people I spoke with are just like our owners. But so this is my interview with Cody Fredrickson. He is sort of the general manager, the tour commissioner, the head guy in charge, telling us a little bit about what's new, what's old, and getting ready to welcome people to the new Las Vegas Distillery.
This is a complete 180. It was lovely and rustic and hand-built and I'm hesitant to badmouth it, but at the same time, it was also kind of very low bar. Sure. Right, you had a bunch of craft tables in the middle. You know, some of them were wood, some of them were not.
Right.
There wasn't really a cohesive.
Yeah, it was,
other than the bar that was where we're sitting at now. Well, what used to be where we're sitting at now.
Yeah.
And then the little bar that was in the distillery area itself.
Right.
That was it.
And I do have respect for, and like admiration for that also.
Absolutely.
In that, let the spirits speak for themselves. Let the creator speak. Because there, it's one thing in Vegas, unfortunately has it in certain aspects, is that it's very flashy, but there's no substance behind it. And I think like we've showed, especially as a community and being local, that there is substance. We have a community. And so I wanted something very elegant, kind of thought through, but also with like a really nice substance behind it and true creators behind it as well. So I think both can go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, you know, it was more moonshine, you know, and we're, that's just not the story we're telling. So it's a little different in that regard.
So that's a good segue. Before we talk about some of this beautiful stuff sitting in front of me, and a little bit more about the building and some of the stuff you've done, what is the story you're trying to tell?
To me, it's the story of Las Vegas being legendary. We, you know, when we're in it as locals, we're inside the bubble and we don't realize how just amazing this city is and yeah. can be and continues to be, because, you know, we're on the inside, you know. So, you know, just like the video loops, we're still working on these, but in the tasting room, we're going to have these legendary moments in movies and, you know, things that really remind people what experiences we give people. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it sounds cheesy, but all we have is our experiences and memories and connecting with people. And I think Vegas does that, you know, better than anyone. So that's really the story we want to tell. And beyond that, but we're telling it with our spirits, with our tour, with our tasting room, with every element of the brand. And then behind all of that, there's real people in the community making legit cool stuff. You know, Johnny is an artist in my mind, and he's painting some really cool pictures right now with his distillates. And I'm really proud to be a part of that. So yeah, that's really the story we want to tell, and we want to, you know, get the community in first and make connections.
Well, speaking of community, you and I have chatted a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about some of your partnerships here in the Vegas community.
Yeah, so it's super important for us to, if I can buy it and source it and collaborate locally, I am. Obviously, certain things we can't. We have to go out of state. But ones that I'm most proud of, I think Speakeasy Candle, and it's funny saying this too, is like a guy that's not super into candles. But one of our first collabs was doing a candle and with Speakeasy. And they do their candles based on cocktails, which I've always loved that. Back in the day, I would cut the liquor bottles and then fill it with, you know, wax and try to mimic the tasting notes in the candles. So that was cool that someone was doing that on, like, you know, on on the professional side. So we did a barrel-aged rum old fashioned candle with them.
Cool.
Which was fun. Kids in the Attic is doing all of our murals and all of our apparel. So that's another Happy Ending Chocolates. You know, we teamed up with them. I've done a few projects with them. And so we did a four-piece chocolate set that pairs with our spirits that we'll launch with. So that was very exciting. And then a chocolate bar also. So yeah, it's... And then the big one is Dark Moon.
Yeah.
So Dark Moon was really early on in the project, and we met with them. This was over a year ago. It said, we want to do an amazing coffee liqueur, but I also want to support you guys in every other aspect. Having the cold brew and can here to sell, using their espresso, their drip coffee, because we knew it'd be a huge part of the program. And that was the liqueur that, as a team, we set out to want to do something really special with. So we partnered up with them and Kyle over there. We went back and forth with different roasts and blends. And so we're doing a cold brew coffee liqueur with Mexican vanilla and Belizean cacao with a rum base that we're super proud of. It's a little higher proof than Mr. Black. 25% less sugar, which we thought was cool.
Yeah.
So it's a little on the drier side. I forget the exact amount, how much sugar less than Kahlua, but it's a bazillion percent. But that along came with, not to get too far into that, but that came with struggles too, and how to provide the right mouthfeel with taking away so much of the sugar. So we think we nailed it there, and it's fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you yourself are doing some woodwork. and some other little pieces. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so originally it started very small in that I came onto the program and the owner of the distillery, it was very important for everything to be very thoughtful and elevated if we can, very bespoke if we can. But it also, I was on the side where I've seen a ton of things tried where, I mean, when I opened Sparrow and Wolf, I did a get off my lawn cocktail in a cigar box and yep. smoke. It was cool, but not when you got 20 of them.
You're right.
You know, so I've learned a lot where I'm like, okay, what can we do to be impactful, but also make it practical on the people executing it and the guest as well. So on that side, I started with a flight board and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do the typical like tasting room flight board. So I worked, you know, the logo into it, which is,
yeah, it's awesome.
You know, the iconic Vegas sign diamond that we kind of simplified. So it's that nod. Everyone knows what it is, but so that's kind of where it started. And then just me being me, I guess, I can't let things, it's really, I've done it all my life. I don't like things to be very generic. I like to have my hand on it a little mm-hmm. bit if I can change it. So that went into, you know, the retail area and redoing a vintage TV console and everything, the charcuterie and cheese boards. So yeah, as you walk through the plaques on the barrels, like I thought we could do better. Not better in the sense that spray painting a stencil or like, you know, is that's very traditional for barrel heads. Yeah. And I love that. I love the romance of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought like, what else could we do to like elevate this a little bit? So I started playing with like barrel plaques for the barrel heads and things like that. So to me, it's just the little pieces that help fill in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of note for collectors of this kind of memorabilia, because we know people that collect barrel heads. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even I have a few barrels at home, like actual barrels.
Sure.
People can, from the gift shop, buy the used plaques.
Yeah. No, that was something. Yeah, because we've already dumped some barrels so that because we're doing secondary aging and.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, what are we going to do with these plaques? And then it was just a perfect fit to, you know, I would love to have those too, especially if you can find like your favorite spirit or maybe like the date we put it in.
Yeah, exactly.
There are some on there. Like we did a barrel on Valentine's Day. So I put,
I won't use their name, but you know very well there's people out there always looking for a dump date on a particular bottle.
100%. Yeah. I was on a Blanton. 100%. I was on a Blanton's list for my daughter's birthday.
Yeah.
And I finally found the bottle. So, but yeah, like, you know, I put a little heart. I changed the barrel plaque a little bit for the Valentine's Day barrel. So it's in there somewhere. Barrel 21 has my daughter's name on it. It's because that's my lucky number.
But. Yep. So tell me a little bit about, so you came in, you're wearing all these hats, not to simplify it, but you're basically in charge of the tap room, the tour experience. How are you going to be doing that differently from people who remember George and have been on those tours previously? How do you see the information, and if I may assume education, happening the way you want to see it done?
Yeah, so I think I've had a benefit, I think, you know, in taking a lot of distillery tours over the years. So there's certain things that I've seen that I really, really like that I implemented here or just a little bit different. But I think education's key, training's key. I've also been on some tours where I didn't feel the connection between the tour guide and the tour. And to me, that's our first brand ambassador is, you know, when people come in. So they really have to love that process. So I think getting them educated and passionate and excited about it, if they're not already, that's the top thing that I want to accomplish there. But from a guest coming in to take a tour, I just want it to be, have value. I think there's a lot of tours where it's just like, this is the this is the still, this is the fermentation tank. You know what I mean? To be a little more interactive. There's an ingredient cart that I'm really, really proud of because you can get your hands in it, smell it, taste it, you know, taste the molasses that we're using, taste the heads, hearts, and tails, rub it on your hands, get into it, because then you automatically have that connection with the spirit. And then that just makes it so much better when you go to taste the spirit, you know, during the tour. You just understand it a lot better. So in that regard, I think it's just a little bit more interactive than I've seen a lot of tours. And then, I just think that connection needs to be there. And
I love that you keep using
the drill.
It's fine. Yeah, exactly. I love that you keep using the word connection, because that's exactly what I was thinking when, you know, I got the little mini tour before we sat down, is that, you know, you're making a point of saying, look, here's some new stuff, but here's a lot of old school stuff.
Yeah.
And look what we did here, and look how that looks different. And, you know, again, it'll get edited. The ingredients cart, you know, reach into that, put it in your hands, smell it, you know, rub it between your hands. Because in my experience, and as you've mentioned, it's more engaging. And then people, when they come back into the tasting room, you know, exit through the gift shop, super smart. I want to sit at the bar.
Yeah.
I want to taste the stuff that I just saw and smelled. I want to see if I can pick it out on my palate.
Sure.
So to that end, what kind of experiences will people be able to have at the bar? Are we talking flights? Are we talking pairings? What's your vision for that?
Yeah, so we'll do flights. We're going to start with, we can get to the portfolio, but a vodka, white rum, an unaged American single malt, cherry smoked, an unaged white dog, and then our coffee liqueur. Aged spirits are going to be coming right after. Mm-hmm. So we already have a release set for late summer and then winter. So aged spirits. So we'll have enough to provide some really cool flights. But in terms of experience, yeah, flights for sure. Top level cocktails, like very cool presentations, memorable cocktails. And then, you know, I've also been in spots where that's the most important part. And it's not to me, it's that they're really freaking good.
Yeah.
So really great cocktails on both sides. And then even like our food program, I'm super, super proud of, and it's taken us a long time. Like we have a chocolate chip cookie that took us like 50 something batches, and we kept going back and forth. And I mean,
does it have a little of the booze in it somewhere?
There may be elements of that. But you know, we're really proud of that. So that's going to be an experience, you know, so that you can have a really high quality, amazing bite to eat while you're tasting the cocktails, the spirits by themselves. And then also just the ambiance in the room. I think I want to make it inviting so that you can, you know, stay, hang out.
Awesome. So backtracking a little bit, tell me a little bit about your personal history in whiskey and spirits and things like that. Where did you start and how did you get here?
What led me here? I started on the strip in kind of a pool bartender environment. So I eventually left that. You know, it was, I could have definitely retired there. It was one of those things where I joined, you know, the union when I was 22 years old, and I did that for like 11 years, but also at the same time, I wanted to do more. I always need to learn more and challenge myself. So I got really burned out. And then just so happened that we did a pool training at the time it was Wirtz with, Andrew Pollard was there, and so he was the president of the USBG. And after this pool training, no one else cared, you know, but I was like, I'm in this room, the academy, and I'm like, what is this thing? So afterwards I said, what more can I do? And he's like, join the USBG. So long story short, I got involved with that, eventually got on council, became secretary of the USBG with Kristen Schaefer and Raul and all, you know, Adam O'Donnell. It was just an amazing council. Same time, I the girls at Velveteen Rabbit gave me a chance. So I started there. That was my first craft cocktail spot. So they gave a union bartender a chance and a craft, which, you know,
yeah,
it was kind of risky for them to be like, who is this guy? But I was like, I'm super passionate. So that was kind of my start in craft cocktails and just wanting to learn more. I went from there to open, be the lead bartender at Cromwell. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a year, then left that to open the beverage program at Sparrow and Wolf. So that was just every kind of step was another challenge for me, and that's kind of how I've liked it. And then from there, I went to be the whiskey specialist at Scotch 80 at the mm-hmm. Palms for 2 years until this pesky little thing shut down the whole economy.
But I remember quite a large dinner there with you once.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a whole, man, the learning experience there and just 2 years of just being immersed in the whiskey culture. And, you know, it was my love anyway before going mm-hmm. into that. So I think that's why they picked me for that role anyway. But being in charge of, you know, 550 whiskeys and curating flights and tableside presentations, and the tableside cart was a lot of fun to design there too. So, but super, I love that program. I love the team there. So it was kind of like heartbreaking to see that, you know, 99% are at Barry's now. So it's awesome that I can see them there. But that kind of led me to COVID shut down, and then I went to the supplier side working for Diageo mm-hmm. for a couple of years. That was awesome in that I could, you know, help bars with bar programs and be creative and solve problems in that regard, but also educate, which is really what I love to do at this point. I grew a lot in that role for sure, especially on, I feel now that I can talk to anyone, whether it be, you know, I could relate to washing dishes, to being a barback, to right. running a bar, to speaking to a head of food and beverage. It doesn't matter at this point. I think I have those perspective now, and that kind of led me to this role, which honestly, I had a job set up for a steakhouse that just now recently opened. So it was a long delay, but I had that job set up, and this opportunity came up, and I'm like, oh, I'll just go see what's going on. But I think I just want to go back to bartending for a little bit.
Yeah.
The clock in, clock out.
Leave it all behind.
let's get off salary for a little bit. And then this came up, and you know, it just kind of fell into place. It was odd. Like, I looked at my wife, you know, after I accepted the offer, I can't believe I ended up back at the Las Vegas distillery. You know, it's odd and it's cool. And sometimes when it's like late and I'm the only one here, it's creepy and, but special also,
yeah.
You know, it means a lot to me for, you know, the history that I had here. And yeah, I hope I can do some justice to the life of the old distillery, for sure.
Tell us a little bit about your history here and your friendship with George.
Yeah, so right around the time I joined the USBG, we took a tour here, and I forgot the first tour, but I told him at the end, I go, I want to work here. And at that time, and pretty much throughout the life of the distillery, they couldn't, it was, the business is hard, and it's hard to hire staff. And so he's like, you know, I don't know if that's, and I go, I don't need money. I'll just let me volunteer. Just let me come. So I just started coming around and volunteering. And then, I just kind of fell in love with the creator, and the artist. I've always had a lot more respect for that than the businessman. I just respected that about him, where he didn't care about the money, he was doing it. And is it the best plan for business? No. And it's, you know, you have to straddle that line.
Right.
But I did like that he was doing what he loved to do. He was telling the story he wanted to tell. He was making people feel how he felt it was important when you walked in the door. When you left, you're like, oh, that was the feeling when you left here wasn't horrible. It wasn't bad, you know, and that could be, you may not have had whatever, the best spirit or whatever, whatever it was, but his, the way George made you feel, you know, while you were here. And that's really what was special about this place. This, the spirits they made were almost secondary, you know, to him. So really, you know, on the mentor side, a lot about spirits, but more about life and kind of, you know, he wanted to sail the world and he was a filmmaker, and it was just, I felt a connection because of the emphasis on creating first and then let everything else fall into place. And that's what I feel I'm doing here. Although my title, I need to also run a business. So, you know, that's always on my shoulder of like, you know, fiscally, does this make sense?
Yeah.
But there are some things that don't make a lot of sense on the business side, and I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
So just for the sake of, you know, being true to myself. So,
yeah. And it sounds like honoring a lot of tradition and making sure that that passion is still here.
Yeah. And it's, we're not the old distillery. I'm not George. Johnny's not George, but that's okay. Cause I think, you know, and I don't think, I know he would want someone, we have this amazing Carl still in there. He would want someone to use those tools to paint their own picture.
Yeah.
I think he wouldn't be happy. And I can genuinely say this, that if we brought on a distiller and we made the same old recipes, and he's not that guy. And I don't think he would have respected that as much as Johnny saying, hey, the tools are here. This is what I'm going to create. And let me tell my story. I hope that resonates with people.
The news is next. This is Food and Loathing.
Here you are in Vegas. You're hungry and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. You want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
It is time for the news. Let's start with, as teased, as promised, a few of the things I learned at the UNL Vino Sake Fever, which was a great place to catch up on gossip. As I mentioned, I spoke to our old friend Louis DeSantos, who you may remember from District 1, the short-lived COVID fatality Mordeo Wine Bar, which was so great before they had to close that. The Kayara Sushi he was involved with. More recently, you may have heard me speak about his Gyu Plus sandwich concept. Well, he's involved in two, I don't want to say they're new projects. Yeah, I guess they are new projects. Sort of. Just a few doors down from each other in the giant Spring Mountain Road complex that houses all the restaurants we love in Chinatown. So I'm talking about the same place where you're going to find the Golden Tiki, Mas Por Favor, Partage, all that. Louis has partnered with the team from Suzuya Patisserie, Japanese bakery on Buffalo and Warm Springs, the people that are making those moniers that we heard about at the top of the show. They are working on a cafe that should be open within the next month or so in the old Half Bird space.
Oh.
Right on the corner of that complex. It'll be called Suzuya Cafe. And I was over there the other day. They're doing renovations.
Oh.
I was watching, seeing how that's going. It's coming along really well. And then two doors down on the Wynn Road side of that complex, right? So stepping back from Spring Mountain Road. Two doors down, if you go back that way, you'll pass Baby Stacks. And then there's another space in there where Louis is working on a Gyu Plus space that will have all the sandwiches that he's done at the Gyu Plus pop-up.
Okay.
That's going to be in the front with more of, more of kind of counter service type of setup. And then in the back, a more social room where they're going to be able to do pop-ups and dinner type
Fun.
Stuff. Maybe some activation, some entertainment. Louis's daughter is a great performer.
Yep.
She had worked out on a concept that was sort of a musical diner with him that they worked for in the past. So hopefully we'll get some entertainment.
Did you know that she was the voice on the Happy Birthday song at Mordeo?
I did not know that.
If you had a birthday at Mordeo, they would play the Happy Birthday song over the loudspeakers, and it was her.
Oh, very awesome. I think I was there when you had a birthday there once.
I think so.
To be honest. I wasn't with you, but I was there the same night you had a birthday. So I toured both of those spaces. I recorded an interview with Lewis, and we're probably going to get to that next week, maybe the following, but probably next week. But I wanted to get this news out there now because both those things are on the way. Look to the summer for the Gyu Cafe thing going on. And yeah, look for Suzuya Cafe within about a month or so. Also in the news, former Las Vegas chef John Courtney, a veteran of Carson Kitchen, Marche Bacchus, Block 16 Food Hall, RMC Food. Oh, shit, where else? Born and raised, actually. He's going to be returning to town this Sunday, April 28th, for a sandwich pop-up at Page and Rye in downtown Summerlin. He'll be serving a sandwich called the Jen Corelli, a porchetta tribute to Lardo chef Rick Jen Corelli. John, of course, worked with him when he was at Block 16, and he created this sandwich in John's Chop Shop Park City Butcher Shop.
Which is so good, by the way.
You've been up to Park City, you've seen that? So I usually don't use phone interviews, but he's up there in Utah. Yep. There wasn't much I could do. So John and I spoke on the phone over the weekend, and here he is explaining what he's doing.
My good friend Lauren and her husband, Dragos, opened a clothing lifestyle store called Page and Rye in downtown Summerlin. They also have an event room there called the Gray Room. So they do different events, and she applied for a bar license for this place. And so we thought, well, it'd be fun to come down and showcase some of the things we've been doing up here, and good excuse to come visit friends and family down in Vegas and, you know, kind of show off some food and beverage. So we're going to do our Jen Corelli sandwich, which I dedicated that sandwich to Rick Jen Corelli, the owner of Lardo. He's a good friend when we worked together at Cosmo, and we stayed friends after. And during pandemic, Portland took a big hit, of course, just like a lot of places did. And so we were opening during that time, and his porchetta sandwich was one of my favorites. And, you know, it's kind of the Keller rule. If I change 10% or, you know, 10 grams of something, it's kind of mine anyways. But I didn't want to have him come in someday and sit here and see the sandwich on my menu, and it would be weird for me, you know. So instead, I wanted to pay homage to him, and so we named it the Jen Corelli. And it's our roast pork. We use a local Utah pig, debone the whole thing, take the head and legs off, and then roll the whole thing up and roast it whole, skin on, and then slice it down for our sandwich meat. And then that gets re-cooked again in our wood-fired oven. Traditionally, this time it'll be cooked in a little bit of a side station there. And then Paige makes our sourdough bread.
How close is this to the sandwich that you were serving at Lardo here in Las Vegas?
It's pretty similar. Yeah, it was pretty similar. Difference would be Utah pig, and then it's our bread. So we use sourdough versus the Rick actually uses ciabatta. So we use like a sourdough that's hard. A little different. That was my spin on the sandwich. I'm from San Francisco, and, you know, sourdough to me is very wholesome.
Right.
And we use a local Utah flour that's milled for us, and then it's a 3-day fermentation process to get to bake our bread. Yeah, it's really light and beautiful and sour and all those fun adjectives. But yeah, we've been doing really good with it. And then we're going to do a few things. We're from the Honey State now, right? The bee state. So we use a local Utah honey that we get from a family that the son started as a merit badge for his Eagle Scout and then turned it into a business and paid his way through college. It was amazing. Awesome. Wow. Honey. And so we get tubs, a 5-pound tub of raw unfiltered honey for $35.
Wow.
So we turn those into honey lemonade that we do at the shop. And because of the bar license, and it is Vegas, let's have a little fun, so we decided to do our version of the B&E.
Cool. So now, what day are you in town, man, and what hours?
It'll be Sunday, 11 to 3. And then after that, we're hoping to get down to see Brian Howard and see him at his event at 50-50 that night. We bought some tickets to that, too, so it'll be just like a good family reunion with Vegas chefs and locals alike.
Chinglish Cantonese Wine Bar in Boca Park is hosting a Martin Ray Vineyards wine dinner on Thursday, May 2nd. Ticket for the 5-course meal with wine pairing are $150 in advance through chinglish.com.
And I just want to throw just a little bit of something out here as we're closing up the show. You know, just to remind people, Chefs for Kids is having their fundraising dinner next Saturday, May 4th. If you haven't hopped on to buy tickets, you can go to chefsforkids.org. Al and I will be there in all of our glory. So please come to the dinner or make a donation. If you're so inclined, you can donate things to the auction still. All of that is still open. Just contact me. That's easy. You can email me, gemini@wishboneandvine.com. Just let us know. And also a quick thing. I popped into Crush Pad on Sunday. And just for a quick drink with a girlfriend after we saw the musical concert at I don't know where I've been lately.
Yeah.
At the Smith Center. We went to listen to like movie theme orchestra. It was a young adults orchestra thing. It was really cool. But the reason I'm bringing it up again, I know I've talked about them a lot, is somebody went in because they heard them on our podcast.
Hell yeah.
And said, we had to come here because we heard the interview. And so I just wanted to thank listeners for doing that kind of thing. Let people know where you heard about them. That's huge. That helps us get the word out, or, you know, getting the word out better. And even though I'm flubbing mine today, and just let people know, you know, that you love them and that we love them too. So I just wanted to thank people for that.
Cool. Okay, man. Noted. And yeah, good job driving traffic down the crush pad. That is about it for this week, man. Thank you to all of our guests, Cody Fredrickson, John Courtney, Louis DeSantos, Wendy Dio, Susan Feniger, and Mary Sue Milliken. Who the fuck else puts a show together with?
That's a hell of a concert, man.
A hell of a damn. On behalf of Samantha Gemini Stevens and our out-of-town partner, Mr. Rich Johnson, I'm Al Mancini. Stay hungry.